Are we talking Hamilton this morning? Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, which is just a wonderful piece of music. Van Morrison has a great take on that. Visions of Motherless Child, and that is UCC Music and Race Seminar, and Paul Oakley Stovall. Paul, good morning to you and welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Marty.
Not at all, and thank you for coming to visit us. Indeed, I better explain a couple of things. The first thing is that people will know you really from, I suppose, from playing George Washington and the tour of Hamilton, which has turned out to be one of the most exciting and one of the most successful pieces of theatre in decades, hasn't it? Really, it's
maybe ever.
Yeah, maybe ever. Absolutely, it really has been. You must have been incredibly proud to be a part of it.
You know, it's strange. Pride might not be the word I use. By the time I joined, the juggernaut had taken off. You know, the train had left the station, and sure, it was more for me a matter of it wasn't going to slow down. I had to jump on and get my act together. So there was no time to really, I'd say it took about 30 seconds when I got the call, and then I was in abject panic.
Really?
To get myself ready.
Yeah, and you wanted it to be as good as you could make it, obviously.
Yeah. You know, you forget the fact that they picked you, so obviously they think you can do it, and you think, I have a lot to live up to.
There is that small matter of it being important to live up to the expectation. And also, you don't, because I think of the importance of Hamilton in terms of African-American history and all the rest of it, I think it was vital that it just be right and that you did the best you could.
That's right. You know, you want to represent yourself well. I want to represent my parents well.
Yeah, for
and,
sure.
And you're suddenly quite visible. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now listen, you're here to do with, well, Frederick Douglass. And now Frederick Douglass is a very famous man. For anyone who's read American history and anybody who's read a lot about African American history, he will be terribly well known. And he's cited by Barack Obama, of course. But this incredible man was quite something. And I'll explain to those who may not be familiar with Frederick Douglass what it was about him. I know you look him up and you see American abolitionist, sure, but a whole lot more besides. He was an incredible orator, wasn't he?
He was an orator, he was a liberator, he was a free thinker, he was self-educated. His goal in life was autonomy, which seems very simple. But, you know, Frederick Douglass was pre-social media and pre-photographs in the way that we look at them now, where you can just look him up or listen to a recording of him actually speaking. So I don't want to say he will be forgotten, but he can sometimes be overlooked in the world of Martin Luther King, Barack Obama, you know.
Yes.
Because our memories start to fade, but he's the original.
But that is the point. I mean, I have seen him in when I have read over the years the writings of Martin Luther King and Ralph Abernathy or whatever to do with the civil rights movement. His name is there, and you understand.
Yes.
But he's not, as you say, at the forefront. But of course, he died before 1900, so, you know.
Right, right. The funny thing is, the way that we look at social media now, he actually was the original social media influencer. He was the most photographed person of the 19th century. Not black man, not American, person of the 19th century. And he was very attuned and focused on what his image would be. He very famously never smiled in his photographs in his 20s and 30s and 40s because he didn't want to push forward the narrative of the happy slave.
Right, right.
So he was very, you know, he was the original selfie curator of his image, social media influencer. Even the letters that he sent back to America from Ireland, he was very aware that everything he sent back would be published by Garrison. So he was very clear about what he was writing in those letters.
You make the point about him not smiling. He was also very elegant.
Very elegant and athletic. Very athletic, very tall.
Yeah.
He was into fitness before that was a thing, you know, 200 years.
And listen, he was a running mate. Again, is that true or is that an error? That a running mate as a vice president, is that true?
I'll have to pass that on to historians. Something I'm not certain if it's true or not.
So. I read it. I thought I was fascinated by the concept.
Yeah.
Thinking of Barack Obama, thinking of Kamala Harris. Listen, stay with us. You mentioned Ireland, and this is a great thing, because you're in Cork and I'm in Dublin, because I want to play this piece called Outside. Will you explain Outside to me?
Yes. You know, when I arrived in Dublin, I was trying to just connect with the spirit of Frederick being here, and it struck me that, you know, he was alone. And it must have concerned him very much what people thought was going on inside his head and what he was presenting on the outside. There's a term called code switching that a lot of black Americans have to do, where we may be thinking one thing, but we'll present another facade to the outside world. So that's where the song came from.
Outside.
Outside.
And this is it.
So much laughter all around me, and I don't let myself smile. So many miles I've covered, but I don't let myself rest. No time for that. More letters to write, more speeches to give, more truths to tell. And all the while I wonder, more people to meet, more tasks to complete, more freedom to seek. And all the while I wonder,
Outside. I'm chatting with Paul Oakley-Stovall, who played George Washington in Hamilton. And I'm thinking, Paul, you talk about this idea of thinking one thing and acting another way. What can you explain that? What it means? What does that actually mean? As an African American?
Well, you know, there were laws, and there still are in some way on the books in some instances that controlled our bodies and controlled our minds. And so in order to survive, we had to sometimes present in one way while trying to manifest the energy and build coalitions to get our freedom.
Yes, yeah.
So
yeah.
That has been going on for 400 years in America.
And it's still we see awful scenes still in
still.
Your country. It's incredible. Talk to me about the idea of him coming to Ireland. Why did he come here?
You know, listen, it's such fresh information to me, Marty, that I'm happy to share it with everyone.
Sure.
I am a college-educated black American, and I thought I knew everything there was to know about Frederick Douglass. And it was actually an Irish woman who lives in Wicklow, Nadia Ramutar, who told me. she asked me about Frederick, and I said, of course I know Frederick Douglass. I was almost, you know, jokingly insulted. Of course I know. I know everything about Frederick.
Of course you do, yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
Please, I'm American. Yeah, yeah. And she said, well, did you know he came to Ireland when he released his autobiography? It was so, it shook the country. He really exposed the true horrors of what was happening with slavery in America. You know, and technically he was still a slave, although he had escaped north, that rumors were spreading that his owner was going to send people north to find him and catch him. There was a price put on his head. And his closest advisors, including his wife, Anna Murray Douglas, said, you need to leave to let things cool off. And so they sent him to Ireland.
That's incredible.
Alone.
Yeah, and around the 1840s, the famine was beginning. I mean, what a time.
Yeah, now that's part of, you know, I'm writing this 8-episode limited series, and, you know, when I came over here so I could put my feet on the ground and feel the place. I found that out as I was getting here.
Yeah.
That it was just beginning, yeah? I mean, I was speaking to a scholar at Maynooth University, Kieran Riley, who said you could smell the dying crops in the air.
Crikey.
But it was like that. And so he was, you know, trying to make sure that I presented Dublin as the somewhat dangerous place it was becoming out of desperation.
Sure,
so
sure.
I didn't realize I was going to have that other thickness, that other character to present.
Much as
I didn't realize that I'd find out that it was the women of Ireland who were really organizing the anti-slavery abolitionist movements.
But isn't it incredible to think that he came here at a time when in his own country he would have been segregated from all manner of opportunity. Whereas when
worse than segregated, you know.
Yeah, well, of course, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He would have come here, and he would have been very exotic, I expect, coming to Ireland at that time in the 1840s.
I think so.
He would have been able to walk in the same door as people. He would have been able to sit in the same establishment as people, wouldn't he? He wouldn't have had any issues.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the artistic swing I have to take. I have to think, well, there's an exoticism that in America we don't appreciate, we don't like being othered or, you know, exoticized. But I think it may have been different here from the things that I'm reading, that it wasn't like, ooh, look at him, but it was just because he was an impressive person.
Yes, yes, but he was also a person who would be given the same courtesy as anybody else,
absolutely,
they brown or white, or, you know what I mean? In other words, it didn't matter.
There's something in Ireland about understanding oppression. So people here, and I have found Ireland different from other European countries that I've been to, where they just take you as you are.
That's right. That's
and
right.
And you have to show who you are. I mean, listen, everyone here in Ireland is kind. I've said it a million times. Oh. The biggest thing I learned here is that kindness is easier being kind.
No, that's very true, but I know a few fellas you wouldn't want to meet.
Okay,
but that's
I haven't met everybody.
Not everybody's brilliant. Listen, when did you get the idea for the musical? When did it enter your brain to go down this road, Paul?
Well, when Nadia was speaking to me, and that's the interesting thing. A lot of people, because I'm in Hamilton, I think because I'm writing music that you've played that has inspired me about Frederick, I'm actually writing a straight-ahead television limited series, 8 episodes, but music is going to be a part of it.
Right.
Which I because Frederick was a musical person, so that's just has seeped into me, and I'm a musical person. So I'm working with my colleague, Nikhil Sabu, who's also in Hamilton with me, and he traveled to Ireland with me. And we mostly started writing the songs for Douglas Week. And as they came along, I started imagining, like, duets between Isabel Jennings of Cork, whose family lived here in Cork, Isabel Jennings and Frederick. And we were blessed to have Frederick Douglass's actual great-great-great-great-granddaughter, Nicole Morris, sing the role of Isabel.
Oh, for heaven's sake, that's amazing.
So it's interesting how Frederick is working on all of us.
For sure. There's another piece I want to play that you're responsible for, Traveling. Can you explain this piece to us?
Yeah, within the series, I've imagined a character named Govind, who is a South Asian Indian man. I wanted to bring that culture into the story. Mm-hmm. And to create a fictional person that Frederick would have something in common with, the color of their skin. And someone who may be a truth teller to him, because I also learned that, you know, the wealthy in Dublin, they didn't want Frederick to see the underbelly of what was happening.
Sure.
They wanted to just present the good side, which is not a knock on them. It's what we all do. You put your best foot forward when you have a visitor. So I imagined this this traveling song would be if the two of them went out into the countryside, and Govan has one understanding of being away from the city and out in the country, not knowing that a black man who is a slave who has run away has a very different feeling about being in the countryside. And what that meant if you were out in the country,
that meant
you were running.
That's right, that's
right. So we do not feel safe in the country. We felt safer where you could disappear in the city, right?
Yeah, it sends a shiver down my spine to hear this, yeah. But I do get it. Here it is then, this is Traveling.
What was your life like before this?
Read my book.
Reading is not my thing.
Well, we'll have to work on that.
You all right there, Mr. Douglas?
Sure. Just getting used to feeling my lungs full. How about you? You all right?
Yeah. Happy to be with someone who looks like me.
You think I look like you?
Close enough.
Close enough.
I hate the city. I feel so free in the countryside.
We do not have that in common, my brother. In my life before this, if you found yourself out in the countryside, you were being hunted, and you were looking for a river to hide your scent.
Oh, I'm sorry, brother.
My grandmother promised me that one day I'd walk freely on this earth. Not running, but just traveling, traveling. Maybe with a friend. Traveling, traveling, no beginning, no end. Traveling, traveling, down some random road. Traveling, traveling, no fear, no cares, no load. In the place where I come from, being out here like this, it would mean we're on the run. And I'm just traveling, traveling, looking straight ahead.
I'm chatting away here with Paul Oakley-Stobel. Incidentally, Paul, I'm just thinking, this is Black History Month, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So all of that's going on. I wonder, in your country back in the States at the moment, are you feeling different? Are you feeling differently about now and about the future?
Well, you know, I haven't been there for a few months.
I know.
I'm doing my best to stay here.
I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot has happened in the last few months.
A lot has happened. A lot of people don't know this. I worked for the Obama administration for 7 years.
What did you do?
It was something called an advance associate. So I wasn't an official staffer, but I helped to set up events. It was like events management.
I've read about you in a promised land. I've read about people like you. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. You know, we set the chairs up. We make sure the lights are in the right place. We make sure the flag is hanging and, you know, and pressed and clean. You know, it's that kind of work.
Yeah, but you're vital, in fairness. You are vital.
I mean, it is vital. You know, not as vital as their speechwriters and their legislative advisors and all of that. But, you know, we live in an image-oriented world.
Yes.
And they were under pressure to have everything perfect in that manner. So we did feel an immense pressure and an immense responsibility to, you know, make sure that everything was just right
everything
for them,
right.
So that it was ease, so that they didn't have to think about that.
Sure.
You know?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking about the fact of you and Frederick Douglass. I'm thinking about the fact of you and Hamilton. I'm thinking about the fact of you and your work, even if you weren't paid, for the Obama administration. Did you meet the great man? Did you meet President Obama?
Oh, yes. And more importantly, I met the great woman, Michelle Obama.
Michelle. Well, now, I am currently in the middle of reading A Promised Land, and I read Becoming. I read that prior to Christmas, so I'm steeped in it. They're an amazing couple of things.
I have a soft spot for Becoming because I'm also from the south side of Chicago, so not only in an emotional way, sometimes in a literal way, the street she would name, I would be like, oh, that's the street that my parents would not let me and my brother go that far because it was just 5 blocks out of the safety zone when you're a little kid, and you know.
Yeah. Well, I got that from the book as well. It was I was reading and going, oh my God. And then she talks about then going in the Beast with her husband some years later down the same streets. It's just an amazing amazing story.
Yeah.
But you must have been immensely proud at the time when he became president. You must have been immensely aware of the significance of it.
You know, I've always considered myself a very consistent person. My highs aren't too high, my lows aren't too low. And I will say that on that day, on the inauguration day, it was bitterly cold. And my duties were on officially the day before, the volunteer day, the day of for Martin Luther King Day. So my duties were kind of done, and then I was just sort of a catch-all, helping out with other people as the inauguration went on. And I ended up in, what do you call those things, like a cherry picker? For the international photographers and media who were kind of far back.
Oh, so they were getting up to take pictures. Yes.
So they could get up to get those beautiful photos of the Capitol building. But it was freezing cold, but I was going up, taking them up, and then going down. So I was the one who had to stay in it all day, going up in the bitter, bitter cold wind. So I had this view up in this pretty dangerous thing with two or three photographers from whatever country, and we go down, get the other two, and come up. And I just was weeping in the cold, just thinking, I can't believe what I'm looking at. And I can't believe the very solitary view that I'm having of this thing.
Yes, very much your view, absolutely.
Right. You know, everyone else would see the photos later, but I was actually seeing it in that moment.
Well, I'm used to you. I was there as well.
You were?
I was, with a pal of mine. And I remember.
I didn't see you.
I know you. If I'd known you had a cherry picker, I would have been over like a flash. I would have said, Paul, let me up there, please. I was with my friend, with the rest of the crowd, but we got close enough-ish. But anyway, we didn't have any official capacity. We wanted to go. As far as we were concerned, it was historical, and we went for a week, and we got tickets close enough, but not too close. But I'll tell you, it was one of the most emotionally charged events I've ever attended in my life. Mm-hmm. To see people, particularly African-Americans of a certain age, in tears at what they were witnessing. It was phenomenal. And to hear him take the oath and then to see Aretha Franklin sing, it was just phenomenal. I don't know, I just thought it was amazing. Anyway, you and I could talk for weeks on this. We really could. You need to come to Dublin, and if we had a restaurant, we could go to lunch and talk about things. But anyway,
well, I'll be back.
I'll be here. And what is the next plan after this? This series, is it already commissioned, or are you putting it together anyway?
There's not an official commission, but okay. I did show the framework and the first episode script to Frederick Douglass's great 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 grandson Ken Morris.
Yes.
And I sort of officially got his approval, and we're forming a business partnership to creatively work on it together. That's a big exhale for me. That's
I know.
Great.
But I mean, that would be wonderful to be able to tell this man's story. Just briefly, when he came here, and when he apparently, again, from what I can discover, he got quite pally with Daniel O'Connell, who's one of the great Irish heroes as well.
Well, that's the thing where you move in between what's down in the history books and what do people imagine, because what I've discovered so far is Mr. O'Connell came to Dublin because he wanted to meet this guy. You know, he knew about Frederick. And he gave a speech at Conciliation Hall, which is now the immigration office on Burg Quay, right there on the River Liffey. And Frederick came, and they shared the stage that night to overwhelming applause. And then they had some time alone backstage. And to this point, my big scene with the two of them is I get to imagine what that was.
Oh, that's
wonderful.
Because
there's no record of it.
Of course,
of course, these two titans closed the door, you know.
Yes, and that gives you a poetic license.
Yeah, I'm not going to push it too hard because
but I like the idea.
Yeah.
A meeting of two very fine fellows. I think that's
you know, that's what people of that level, they know when to close the door.
Yes, for sure.
Conversation will be between. That's right.
That's right.
What do the Titans talk about?
Correct. Now, listen, we have one more piece. You mentioned the fact that there is a piece of music. Well, the piece of music is called Fire My Eyes, right? This is Frederick's great, 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 great granddaughter, Nicole Morris, singing the role of Isabel on the track.
And in a real Hamilton, move, I was thinking, wait, but Nicole's African American, so how could she sing Isabel Jennings, who was an Irish white woman? And I thought, Paul, what are you saying? What show you're in.
Yeah.
It's art. So it's a beautiful bringing of Frederick Douglass's actual cells, and his blood has actually come to Cork and sung this song. And through his great-great-great-great-granddaughter. I think it's a beautiful thing.
Oh, well, listen, congratulations on this great work. I look forward to the whole production. It sounds incredible, Paul, but thank you for joining us. And as you say, when you talk about her, didn't you play George Washington? So, hey.
Exactly. That's why I couldn't believe my hesitation. But no. It did only last a half a second.
Good man. That's the way to do it. Well, look, thank you for joining us today. And I'm glad that you've had a good time with the Cork Migrant Centre and the Nanonagle place there. And that it's all working out. And thank you so much. And I hope we get to meet someday.
And Marty, maybe we'll meet up at the Irish Institute of Music and Song, which I would be remiss not to mention. They've helped me so much. I did a residency up there in Balbriggan.
Yes.
Everyone, please, you know, take advantage. Send your kids there for music workshops. It's a great place. But I've been writing the music there with Nikhil, and they've been helping me mix and produce it. Great guys, Michael Dawson and Donnell Kearney. Please check it out.
Good for you. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and take care, and keep the faith, as we say in Ireland.
Thanks, Marty.
God bless you. Take care. Here's Fire in My Eyes now, and this is Nicole Morris.
Oh, Frederick, you're still up.
It's late. Time to...
Wait. I just need to say... one thing.
I leave tomorrow, Isabel. I gotta get my sleep.
These past weeks have been great.
Yes, they have.
And I just wanna say, Frederick, there's fire in your eyes.
Been listening to Marty in the Morning on RTE Lyric FM.